At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speaker meeting is 1 year of continuous sobriety and have Central as your home group and attend a group conscious meeting. I've done all three. I came in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, not every time I relapsed, but I went back out once for 10 years and came back. And the doors were still open to me. Alcohol had beat me so bad that I was actually willing to do the things that I needed to do to stay sober. The one day at a time process. That's one of the things that actually was very hard for me when I first came in at 25, was to understand that I couldn't drink for the rest of my life. So instead of looking at it that way now, I look at it as it's just one day. And if I want to drink tomorrow, I can drink tomorrow. But anyway, I just came in. I came to a lot of meetings. I worked in steps. I got a sponsor, and my life is immensely better. So I'm glad to be here. Let's see. Okay. And I guess I need to introduce our speaker. Our speaker tonight is Robin. Most people here already know Robin, but I met Robin when I first came back in August of 2012. And, I'm going to get emotional. She's always here. She helps a lot of newcomers and women. Most of the people in here know her just from a cheery disposition, but she actually is an inspiration to me every day. So I don't want to take up too much time, but here's Robin.
Wow. I wasn't nervous till I stood up. All right. I'm Robin, and I'm an alcoholic. Can you hear me? I'm from the Loud family, so I don't even need a mic. I used to think I had a hearing problem, and I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, no, you're just from a very loud family. So it is the truth. My name's Robin, and I'm definitely an alcoholic, and I'm grateful to be here. And my sobriety date is January 26, 2002, and I have a home group. It's here. And I have a sponsor. And I only say that because those are some very important things if you're new. You first got to get sober. And it's great to get a home group. And a home group is just really a place you continuously go to so people get to know you. And a sponsor is really just someone that guides you. And I'm grateful for all of those things. I haven't had a drink in a long time, but I still need all those things, and I'm grateful for that. I'm supposed to tell you a little bit about what it's like, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. If you've been in the rooms the last couple of years, you've heard me cry and whine because I went through a divorce, and I just want to let you know, I think I'm finally okay. So I may cry, but it's going to be because I'm grateful. It isn't going to be because I feel sorry for myself. I still feel sorry for myself, but, you know. Anyways, I was born in Michigan, and I'm from a middle-class family, and Sandy Beach spoke here one time, and he said that the longer he was sober, the better his childhood was, and that's my experience, you know. My first couple years sober, I would have stood up here and just complained and whined about this awful father I had and how he had ruined my life, and the reason I was an alcoholic is I got his genes. His short legs. I didn't get my mom's long ones. And, you know, it was his fault. The good news is today I know that my dad did the best he could. But it's important for me to share about him because he did definitely affect me. My dad we were a middle-class family. We lived in a nice house. We always had nice cars in the driveway. But what went on in that house was not good. And no one knew what was going on because I have a mom that is the queen of denial, and that hasn't changed. She's 75, and she still lies and smiles at you and tells you everything's great. And she always asks what I say about her, and that's what I say is, you're the queen of denial, mother. And you can ask her, Mom, do you remember the time Dad punched me in the face at the dinner table? And she'll say, no. But I think that was the time I had that cashmere jacket on with the brown shirt and the long skirt and those shoes I got at Jacobson's on sale. And it'll be, yes, mother, that was the event that day. So she always remembers what outfit she has on. And, you know, really the truth is that woman, I don't know how the hell she did it. She had four kids and a drunk as a husband. And he wasn't very nice to her either. He didn't like me. I think probably because I talked too much and I irritated him. But it was apparent I wasn't his favorite. And he just didn't like me. And so I spent my whole life trying to get that guy to like me. And as I got older, I spent the rest of my life trying to piss him off. So I don't know if any of you can relate to that or not. But anyways, you never knew what it was going to be like. I learned from my mother to smile and act like everything was okay, too. So nobody really knew what went on in that house. But he drank a fifth of rum every night, as long as I can remember him. And you just never knew. Sometimes he came home and he was in a good mood, and sometimes he came home and he wasn't. And so it was. There was never any stability other than school. So I really liked school. School was a consistent thing for me, and I'm grateful for that. I started drinking when I was 13 that I really can remember. We didn't have, my parents, we always had booze in the house. My dad was a salesman. And so back in the day, he worked in purchasing, actually. And back in the day, salespeople used to give him gifts at Christmas. So he had lots of Crown Royal, which was in those purple bags. And those are great to drink out of until he starts drinking again. And then he finds out that underneath all those purple bags there is no booze because his daughter has drank it. But, of course, the daughter, I have two older brothers, so I always blamed it on them. But anyways, so we always could drink. We always drank on the holidays. My grandmother used to make cream de mint sundaes. I don't know if you ever had any of those, but they're delicious. I like them. I licked your bowl, everybody else's. I also like NyQuil, which is loaded with alcohol. And my mom obviously wasn't real bright because she bought me a bottle a week. So, and that probably was about 9 I started that. I started smoking cigarettes because I didn't want to smoke marijuana like my brother. So, and I always said when I turned 18 I'd quit, and here I am a lot older and still smoking. But I did it all. So I smoked. You know, drugs are part of my story. If you couldn't put it in your needle in your arm, that was the only thing I didn't do. But I did everything else. But I am definitely an alcoholic. I started with alcohol, and it ended with alcohol. And everything started with alcohol and ended with alcohol. But I started drinking, and I don't remember, like, I hear people say, oh, I took a drink and it went in and I felt all better. I don't remember that. I really don't think I ever felt good until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, that's really the truth, and did the work. So alcohol really didn't make me feel good. It just made me feel better than I felt. And you know, I drank every day pretty much, every weekend. I went to my class reunion recently, and it's embarrassing that every single person at that class reunion came up and said, oh, yeah, you know, you were the first person I ever drank with, or you remember smoking doobies, you know. And it's like, yes. And then it's like, well, I don't drink anymore, you know, and they're not surprised that I'm in AA, okay? Not surprised at all. But anyway, so I always drank. My parents moved to South America when I was in 10th grade, and I did crazy, crazy things there. And, you know, once I got sober, you know, my sponsor had me, you know, look for evidence that God had always been in my life. And, you know, I had this problem that I believed, you know, why would God give somebody such a shitty father? I used to think that, you know, why would God do that to me? But the truth is, God gave me not a really great father because he was an alcoholic, but God always made sure there were great people around me. Like, I had a wonderful uncle that loved me, but I didn't see that because I have a perception problem. I like to focus on what's wrong instead of focusing on what's good, you know? And I had a mom. My mom loved me every day. Still to this day, she tells me that I'm beautiful and I can be anybody I want to be. And she's so proud of me, you know, to this day. But I never listened to her. All I ever focused on was the guy that told me I would never amount to anything. And I just share that with you because, you know, alcoholism affects us in many ways. You know, I believe I'm allergic to alcohol. I believe that when I take a drink, you know, it sets something off in me. But also, there's something mentally wrong with me, too. And I got bad news for you. if you're sitting in this room and you got what I got, there's something wrong with you too. But the good news, there's a solution. So anyways, I drank like a pig for a majority of my life. That's what I did. And my quest was to irritate my father as much as possible. The deal was we could get a college education, or we could get a trade, and he would pay for it all. If you got good grades, it was a free ride, which I'm very fortunate that my parents are willing to do that for me. But, you know, I went away to college and I drank. That's what I did. I weighed 102 when I went away to college, and I came back weighing 165. So I did a lot of drinking and a lot of eating. I was in my girlfriend's wedding, and she was all bummed out because they had to sew two dresses together. And I had it was pink taffeta. And at 102, I looked sexy. At 165, I was like a big pink cow coming down. She still to this day complains.
She still looks sexy now.
Huh?
She still looks sexy now.
Oh, you're wonderful. I love you, honey. But anyway, so I drank all the time, and I went away to college, and my dad said it was over when I failed the racquetball course. He said that, you know, there was no reason for it. So I ended up going to beauty school. I had an aunt that was a hairdresser, and I always loved her, and I was very creative, and I loved it. I did. I really liked it. I actually graduated from beauty school. I wasn't a beauty school dropout. And I became a hairdresser, and, you know, dropping out of school really irritated my father, but what I did next really irritated him. I found a nice man. That's usually another way to irritate your father. And he was married, which really irritated my dad. He had a daughter, and he lived in a trailer. And so that was, like, perfect. I remember I had this little, I don't even remember, it was like a Chevette, it was red, and we went for Christmas, and I had gotten a flat tire, and you know, you put a donut on it, right, those donut tires, but you're only supposed to like drive those to safety, but we showed up in my car with the donut on in a snowstorm. My dad was pissed, and I was happy, I really was. And so this guy and I, we lived together in the trailer, and we started our little family, and you know, he didn't drink very much. He was involved in a lot of things. And when I speak in the jails, I always, you know, the first time I went in, I'm like, God, I really have nothing in common with these people. But, you know, God talks to you, and God said, no, you just didn't get caught, Robin. And, you know, that's really the truth. We did a lot of things in that trailer that were illegal. And guns were part of that, and white snow was part of that, and we used to like to steal people from people's marijuana fields, and we did lots of things that it is a miracle, one, I didn't die, and two, that I didn't end up in prison. And, you know, I'm grateful that God was there. He really was. God was there. I got involved in that terrible stuff, and I went from that 102, I got back to down to 80 pounds, so you can imagine what I was doing. And, you know, he had this little girl, and you know, for a long, long time, I hated myself because I wasn't a very good stepmom. There were times that kid, we didn't feed her because we were too busy doing other things. And there were times when we didn't have the heat on because we were too busy. And I'm grateful that we had returnable cans back then, because once in a while, I'd remember that she had an eight, and we'd take some cans back. And, you know, that's just what alcoholism and drug addiction does to people. You know, you forget about your children. And what happened to me is when I came to AA, you know, my sponsor made sure to point out to me that I had done the same thing to that little girl that my dad had done to me. You know, I had neglected her. And I didn't neglect her because I didn't love her. I neglected her because something else meant more to me than her. And really, something else meant more to me than anybody. And that's just called alcoholism and drug addiction. And but it was always alcohol for me. That's what I loved. That's what I started with and ended with. And my mom called me one day when I was living in that trailer and said, I'm looking for Rob. My last name used to be Tall Man. And I'm a short woman. I've actually been this size since I was 9. So the boys loved me in junior high. And she called one day and she said, I'm looking for Robin Tallman. And I'm like, Mom, it's me. And she said, no, it's not me. She said, I'm looking for my daughter. She said, I see her picture on the wall. She had my graduation picture. And she said, you know, she was supposed to be somebody. And I don't know where she is, but I want her back. And for some reason, that affected me. You know, the book talks about that no human, you know, can change what we got. And we won't quit for anybody. But for a moment, I thought about it. And I packed my stuff and, you know, left the guy in the trailer. I even left him with the waterbed, because you have to have a trailer and a waterbed. And I left him and I came to Florida. And something really cool had happened. In that meantime, during that time that I was busy doing all that stuff I was doing, my dad got sober. He found Alcoholics Anonymous, and he got sober, and his life changed. And I have a little sister, and it's important to mention her. She, I hated her, you know. I hated her. I was so jealous of her, because when she grew up, my dad was a different guy. And he was a different guy because he was older and more mature, and he also was sober majority of her life. And so her daddy was this awesome, cool guy that she loved and adored. And totally different than the daddy I knew. And I didn't like her, and I made sure she knew it all the time. I actually, when I was in the trailer and it was snowing a lot, you know, I spent like $10,000 of her money. I'd call my mom every month and say, I need to borrow another $1,000 at Amy's trust fund. But anyway, so I came to Florida, and my dad was sober. And so they had this great life. They had a beautiful home in Longwood, and it had a pool. It was like a U-house with a pool in the middle. And I got naked and started floating in the pool right away. And my dad came home, and he wasn't happy, and told me that it wasn't a party, and I wasn't going to be floating naked in his pool. And then I had to get a job if I was going to stay there. And I got a job. And, of course, I did what I always do, and that is I'm going to change. You know, I'm going to go on a diet, usually. I'm going to go on a diet, lose 10 pounds so I look sexy. And I'm going to quit drinking, or I'm going to cut down a little bit, or, you know, maybe just every 3 days or whatever. But I always got a plan that I'm going to be different, and then everything will be okay. But it never happened that way. I found the usual crowd. I got a friend that worked at a bar, and I drove every day back and forth from Altamont to Windermere. And, you know, my dad, when I would come home, he'd go, you're going to get a DUI, Robin. And I would say, no, I'm not, Dad. And he'd say, it's different now. They throw you in jail if you get a DUI. Where in my dad's day, they threw him in jail, but you just made a phone call and you went down and picked him up. And he kept telling me it was going to happen, and I just kept telling him it wasn't. And one day, drunk like always, I left work. I don't recall what happened, but I was driving down OVT right by the Parliament House. I'm not sure what I was doing. But anyway, I guess I ran into the back of a car. I don't recall. They left the scene of the accident, which would have been great for me, except some guy in a van was looking for DUI drivers, I think, that night. No, he was driving along, and he saw me smash into this car and then continue to proceed down the road, and he got me off the road. And he told me he was going to call the police. And I just remember a little bit of that, and then I remember the police coming. And when they put me in the back of the cop car, all I kept screaming is, all I was doing was drinking. What's the big deal? Of course, I didn't know that I'd ran into the back of the car because I didn't remember. And all I kept thinking was, if I just would have ate a sandwich, you know, if I just would have had a sandwich, then I wouldn't have ran in the back of that car that they told me about. The next day, my poor mom, I called my mom and told her I was in the clink. She wasn't happy. My dad knew, though. He intuitively knew. He was in AA. He knew where I was. He knew I was in jail. I still have the pennies. He rolled pennies all night waiting for the phone call, and he put them in a can. And I still have those as a remembrance, because he was waiting for the Queen of Denial to come out and tell him the big lie. She's not in jail. She's had her girlfriend. She just called. So my mom got in the car, came to 33rd Street, and she said, we need to go to an attorney. Your dad mentioned that as we were going out the door, you know, need an attorney. And so we went to see the attorney, and the attorney said, you're in big trouble. I blew like a 2.8 something. And he said, you need to get the car and hide it quick. Get something done with that car. And you need to get your ass to an AA meeting, is what he told me. So my mom and I spent 5 hours driving up and down Amelia looking for this car because I couldn't remember where it was. And when we would get to I-4, I would say, you need to turn around, Mom. And she'd say, why? And I'd say, because that's the bad side of town. Well, after 5 hours up and down, my mom said, we're going across the street. And sure enough, there was my car. Right across from the Parliament House, which really made her nervous. Now, the good news is I like boys, so I think I was on my way to a boy's house, and it just happened to be on the way to the Parliament House. But anyways, that was my introduction began to Alcoholics Anonymous. I know I am a sick pup, baby, I'll tell you. But anyways, my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, I came. I wish I could tell you I stayed. I see new people, young people out there, and I wish I would have stayed, but I didn't. And I found a nice guy, and we met on Tuesdays and Thursdays at Pine Hills Grace Group, and we went in and went to the meeting, and then afterwards went to the bar and talked about how weird you all were. Y'all were old, and y'all smoked. And the scary part is now I'm old and I smoke. I mean, I don't know how that happened. But anyways, something cool, though, happened. Something really cool happened. My first experience in Alcoholics Anonymous is my dad and I finally became friends because we had something in common. And I didn't know that my dad had been praying for years. And he would say things to me like, baby, you can get off the elevator on any floor you want to. And I'd call crying. And that, you know, there's a way out. And I never asked him why, but he knew. And he knew I had alcoholism. And he knew I was probably going to die. And he knew I had what he had. And he knew there was nothing he could do about it. But I would lie and pretend like I was sober. You know, I'd tell him what happened at the meeting. I didn't tell him I went to the bar afterwards. I'm sure he knew, but I pretended. And that year, my dad ended up dying. He had a massive coronary. He was really sick because alcoholism fucks you up. Excuse my language. I can't believe that just came out of my mouth. Messes you up physically. And even though he had quit drinking, his body was shot. He had diabetes. He was going blind. They were talking about cutting his legs off. I mean, the poor man was a mess. But the cool thing is he died in Lake Michigan. He never caught a fish in his life. And he actually caught a fish. He said there's actually a effing fish in Lake Michigan. He smiled and he died, and he died sober. Now, I would like to tell you that I was all devastated, but I wasn't. I was happy because it meant I no longer had to pretend that I was going to AA and I was sober. And I would like to tell you that I went to his funeral and I was a supportive daughter and helpful. I would like to tell you that I was there for my little sister when she lost the man she loved, her hero. But the truth is, I wasn't. Truth is, I went up there, I got wasted every day, I took a leave of absence because, you know, my dad died, and I just partied, that's what I did, and I'm sure my dad wasn't very impressed. I'm grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, though, because when I finally did make it here, my sponsor promised me that I'd be able to make amends for all that crap, that all that stuff would become my greatest asset, and all of that stuff, God would work out for me, and I'll tell you in a second that story. So anyways, I ended up back in AA. A year later, I tried to kill myself. Actually, I just spoke at that treatment center a couple weeks ago. And I'd like to tell you, I stayed sober then too. But the truth is, I quit drinking for 5 years purely on fear that my mother would kick my ass because she had paid $17,000 to keep me there for a week. And she told me if I drank again, she'd kill me. And she is the queen of denial, but when she tells you she's going to do something, she usually does it. And I was afraid, and so I didn't drink purely based on that. I went to AA for a little bit, but I just quit drinking. I still did the marijuana maintenance plan. I still ran that guy in the trailer. He ended up coming down to Florida, and we were still hanging together, too. And I was the girl that drank Diet Coke in the bar. Nothing changed. God was nowhere. I do remember working a four-step, though. But I don't remember much of it. And our book talks about that there'll come a day, if you don't have a spiritual defense against that next drink, you'll drink again, and that's my experience. And It says it's worth a bad case of jitters to get full knowledge of your condition, and I got it. I got 6 years full knowledge of my condition. I am an alcoholic. I did things in that 6 years that I said I never would do. I went immediately, maybe a couple weeks, right back to the drunk girl that I had been 5 years before. It got worse. It didn't get better. And bad things happened. But the cool thing that happened is it convinced me that I belonged here. And on January 26, 2002, I got up that morning. It was no different than any other morning. I've been going back and forth to AA. I met another gentleman. And, you know, when I did get sober, great things happened. I went back to school. I paid my own way, so I got straight A's. I got a really good job. I even had my own parking spot with my name on it. I had made it. I bought a beautiful home. I had a sports car, and I had a really nice guy that didn't live in a trailer. And, you know, great things happened, but I decided to drink again. And on the day I arrived here, something really cool happened. You know, when you chair a meeting, I always get so irritated when people don't take it seriously, because I came in on that day, I was devastated, and I was done, but I wasn't sure. Because, you know, this idea of never drinking again, I mean, it scared me to death. Even though alcohol didn't work, and it did awful things to me, and I did awful things when I drank, I just couldn't imagine life without it. And that's a terrible place to be. But it's a really good place to be if God's got a chance, and I was in the right place. And there was a guy chairing the meeting. He doesn't know he changed my life. But he shared how he'd been in and out of AA for years, said he couldn't get it. And then one day he got it, and he got a sponsor, and he worked the 12 steps, and his life was different, and he had a year of sobriety. And that day I was convinced. That guy, Denny, is his name. I haven't seen him in many, many years, but he doesn't know that he changed my life. And all he was doing was chairing a meeting. That's all he was doing. But he said my story. And I've never left here since that day. And I haven't found it necessary to take a drink. And I came here every day. We had a little old house, and I was scared. I have my journal that I write in, you know, wrote in the first 30 days, and it says, today I went to the meeting. I tried to have eye contact. I stacked chairs. I emptied ashtrays. I grew afraid, and I left. And each day was like that. I was always emptying ashtrays and stacking chairs, so. And I'm grateful. You know, we don't smoke anymore in the room. We used to smoke there. They had a non-smoking section, which is great. Everybody smoked here, and then the poor people in the back supposedly weren't smoking, but they were. They just didn't know it. But anyways, I'm so grateful that I stacked chairs and I emptied ashtrays, because I knew if I didn't stay here, I was going to die. I knew it. I just knew. And I had hope, you know, and you guys were talking about groups of drunks, and that worked for me. I was very scared of God, because I just thought God was so disappointed in me. Look what I've done to my life, and what kind of girl is grateful her daddy's dead? I mean, that is a sick, sick girl. And so I believe God loved you guys and would help you. I just didn't think God loved me. And, you know, the book says that's what it's about, is to help you establish a relationship with God. And that's what happened for me. I got a sponsor. She was a wonderful woman. She's out there drinking today, but she taught me some great things, and she told me to get my ass in the middle. She told me to pray. I called her after I got on my knees. She said, I want you on your knees every day. I want you to go to a meeting every day, and I want you to call three other women every day. Stay away from the men. They'll pat your ass. The women will save it. And I liked her, and I wanted to be like her. She was happy, and she was pretty, and she was married and had kids, and everything I wanted, she had it. And she's lost it all, too, which is really sad. But anyways, I followed that woman's direction, and something happened to me. She had me write a list of times in life my life was unmanageable. You know, I drove a nice car, and I had beautiful clothes, and I always smiled, and I was really good at acting like everything was okay. And I told her, you know, why don't we just go ahead and go to the fourth step, because I've already done 1, 2, and 3, and then we could just go ahead and get things moving along. And she told me to go home and open my book, and on the front of the book, front first page is everything I knew, which Well, this one says Central Group on it. They don't want you to steal it. But she's like, I called her. I go, there's nothing on there. She goes, exactly. If you knew anything, you wouldn't need me. And she said, you can't stay sober. So my suggestion is shut up and do what I tell you to do. You remember her, don't you, Liz? And she wasn't real sweet. She really wasn't. But she taught me some things that I'm telling you, I still do to this day, to get on my knees in the morning and ask God to help me stay sober. That simple. And at night, thank him, to get my ass to an AA meeting. And I still do that as often as I can, to call three women a day, which I still do. You guys don't like to hear from me now, though, because I cry a lot. And you're like, oh, God, I got to hear her one more time. But you still pick the phone up, and I still call you. And to always work with other women, and I've done that. And when I was 3 years sober, my brother died. And I got a phone call, and they said he had had a heart attack. We later found out that his stepson and him had been drinking, and his stepson beat him to death. And that is the disease of alcoholism, family disease. But I got to share this because I heard a voice. God has never talked to me, but I heard a voice, and I don't know who the voice was, but that voice said, no matter what, we don't drink. And because Lee's here, I remember I came that day here. I had been taught, after working the steps and being in the middle, that I could go through anything, and I never had to drink again, and that there would be people here that had gone before me, and they had experienced the same thing, and they would help me through it. And I remember coming here and sharing that my brother had died, beaten to death by his stepson. And I remember Lee came and put his arms around me, and he said, remember, no matter what, we don't drink. And, you know, I'm forever grateful for that. God told me that. I really think that was God, and Lee confirmed it. But I have learned that no matter what, I never have to drink again. And if you're new and you don't want to drink anymore, you don't ever have to drink again. Something really cool happened, though. When I went to my brother's funeral, my sponsor had promised me, after I did the work, one, she used to say, just do the work, Robin. The third step is about just continuing to do the work. You know, I did my fourth step, and I did my fifth step, and I remember I really didn't get, you know, I was one of those people that really thought the world had done me wrong. She asked me who I was mad at, and I told her nobody, because I'm like my mom. I could tell her what outfit I had on. But she said, well, then how about the people that hurt you? You know, and I had like 150 people on there, for God's sake. Are you men? I hate you guys. But no, I'm only kidding. I love men. I do. I really like them. But anyways, but by doing that work with that woman, she shared with me afterwards. I put my character defects was one. I was too loud. I needed to lose 10 pounds. You know, I was on a diet, even though I weighed like 100 pounds then. And she's like, oh, for God's sakes, Robin, you're a thief, you're a whore. She went on and on and on. And I had a spiritual awakening that moment. I did, really. It was like, oh, my God, because she said to me, Robin, I used to be all those things, too. And the good news is I'm not that anymore, because if you continue to do the work, you will become a woman with grace and dignity. Now, I don't know about you. Grace and dignity were not in my vocabulary. They weren't even things I knew to aspire for. And I can tell you today, those are my goals, to get up every morning, stay sober, and be a good daughter and a good sister and a good friend and be a woman with grace and dignity. Some days I can do it okay. Some days I can't. But anyways, when my brother died, something happened, and I went to the funeral, and I actually suited up and showed up. I stayed sober. I came here. I was there for my mom as she buried her baby boy, and I was there for my sister as she lost her brother, and I was there. I was actually there, and I didn't feel sorry for myself that that kid had taken my brother's life, and I actually had empathy for that kid because he was drunk. And he killed somebody. And how many times had I been drunk and I could have killed somebody? And something magical happened in that sad, sad occasion. I got to make amends to my dad. I got to be a woman with dignity and grace. And I know that my dad is proud of the woman I have become. And my sponsor promised me that, and she didn't lie to me. Now, my sponsor also promised me I didn't get a rose garden, and that was my experience. I see one of my other sponsors. I've had a few sponsors. It is not a marriage. You can have more than one. You got to tell the other one they make you. You got to tell the other one before you get a new one. And I had my one sponsor, and she ended up, she's not with us now. She's still alive, but she's out there. I had another sponsor, Peggy P. Some of you may remember her. She called herself the happy alcoholic. She was a wonderful woman. She taught me about having fun. She said AA is about having fun, right, Doug? But Doug's always here when I speak to see if I'm lying or not. But she taught me about having fun in AA, and she also taught me the truth about bullshitting myself, and she never had a problem telling me the truth either. And when I would make a mistake, I loved her because she always said, I told you, I'd tell you so, but it's okay, I love you anyways. We all make mistakes. And so I remember when I got married, she said, baby, think about it. And years later, she would say, I told you so. God love her. And then I got my other sponsor, Mary, which is back there. And Mary taught me discipline. That's what you taught me, Mary. Discipline. She told me to call her every morning at 7:30. And if anybody knows me, I am not a morning person. I'm a vampire. But she said, you will do that if you want what I have. And I wanted what she had, and so I did it. I got up every morning, I set my alarm, and I called her. And then on Monday, for about a year and a half, was my time to call her. And I got up and did it. And she taught me about discipline and suiting up and showing up and saying you're going to do something, actually doing it, and being on time. She taught me all kinds of things that I know somebody else tried to teach me, but I didn't listen to. And I'm forever grateful for that. Now, some of my sponsees are not grateful for that because it helped me to become a structured sponsor, to actually tell them what I expect and then expect it. Not buying furniture, not getting places to live. I did all that. Not go on OBT and beat on the hotel door, try to get them out. I did that too. I did everything you weren't supposed to. But she taught me that. And then my other sponsor I had was Ann. And Ann was like involved in service. And I got all involved in service and spoke places and did things. She gave me all kinds of great things to do. And I have my sponsor now, Suzanne, who didn't feel good, so she's not here tonight. She's in big trouble. No. And she has taught me never to give up, to just never give up, and that God's got a plan. He just won't tell me what it is. That's what she always says. I'm sorry. And she also taught me it was okay to cry, and it was okay to feel, and to pay attention to who your friends are. And so my sobriety has been awesome. I mean, really, it has been for years just like the greatest thing. I get out of bed and I feel good about who I am. You know, I'm a good daughter today and I'm a good friend. And, you know, and I didn't know that I wasn't a good friend. I didn't know that I needed to call you once in a while. I'm a good friend if you are a good friend. But I didn't know that I had to, like, reciprocate. And so I've learned how to be a good friend. And, you know, my little sister that I was so envious of and hated her guts, you know, she's my best friend today. You know, we own a company together. And, you know, her children have never seen me drunk. And she leaves them with me for a week or two. Now, I think she might be taking advantage of me. But I always tell her I'm making amends to her for all the shit I did to her that I can never make up for. And, you know, I went through a divorce, as I told you in the beginning. And, you know, I can tell you that I almost drank. I did. I almost drank. You know, be prepared for what you ask for. I asked for a divorce. I didn't think he was going to say okay. And he's like, all right, great. And I wasn't ready for that. But I'll tell you, it was the most painful experience I've ever been through. More difficult. Why don't you sit down? I got more bullshit to tell, dude. More difficult than when my brother died. More difficult than when the dogs died. But difficult. But the cool thing is that I had friends all around me that loved me and listened to me and told me don't ever give up. And I almost drank one night. My neighbor gave me a nice bottle of wine because I'm such a nice neighbor. It was pink, cheap. And I opened the bottle. I started to open it up because the pain was great enough. And I heard that voice again, and it said, "You would give it all up for this?" And I'm grateful. I didn't open that bottle, and I just went somewhere and cried some more. And, you know, God talked to me then, and I'm so grateful I didn't give it up. And, you know, I was taught, I'm not really sure who taught me this. I don't even know if I made it up, but I think Peggy P. did, that when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I got to let you know the truth. I can't keep pretending I'm somebody I'm not, because I'm human just like everybody else, and even though I'm happy generally most of the time, when shit happens, I need to tell you. So you know when it happens to you that you don't have to drink either. And so it's cool. I found out lots of people get divorced. Charlie got divorced. He's much happier than I was, though. But he was a good example because he was smiling. I was crying. I'm like, he's doing much better than me. I don't know why. You know, I met a lady, and she kept crying about being divorced, and I was happily married. I never once went up to her and said, "Are you okay?" So I got to see her at a meeting the other day, and I got to make amends to her for not having any compassion. Because today I know what it feels like to have your heart ripped out of your body, and I know that you don't have to drink, no matter what. And I got to wrap this up, but I got to end with a little bit with my friend Shannon. Something happened this year to Shannon. She was in an accident, and I've been feeling so sorry for myself. I was making myself sick. It was like, for God's sakes. And I got a call that Shannon had been in an accident. And Sharon and I have been friends for years. I won't say why. But she's my... I won't say why. Anyway, I think she's sexy. If I like girls, she would be my girl. I always said if she had money, I might... But she doesn't. Anyway, I know, I'm sick. If I had money, I'd get my own. But anyway, so she was in this really bad accident, and I got a call that she'd been in this accident, and something happened. Something happened. And I thought she was going to die. And at that moment, I thought, oh, my God, I have been so consumed with me, which is not a good thing, so consumed with me that I have not been a good friend to my friend the last couple of years. And what happens if she dies and she doesn't know I love her? Well, the good news is she didn't die. The cooler thing is I got to suit up and show up and pull my head out of my ass finally, thank God, and be a friend, you know? And they had a sign-up sheet. We had to watch her, you know, 24/7. She needed someone to watch her. And there was only one shift open for me, and guess what time it was, Mary? 7:30 a.m. And I got up every morning to be with Shannon, and Shannon, cool things happened with Shannon and I. We got closer to God together. I kept thanking her for running into the bridge because I finally got my head out of my ass. I'm like, I'm sorry that had to happen to you. I reminded her that she had another side of the faith, and that there are other bridges for her to get her head out of her ass. And, you know, great things happened. And, you know, I celebrated, I want to finish and then I'll close up. I got to make amends to a girlfriend of mine, and she came like 6 months later. She called and asked if I still went to those classes, and I said, yeah, and she ended up coming here, and she didn't really belong here. She wasn't an alcoholic, I didn't think. But anyways, last spring, my brother and her have always liked each other. They're always eyeing each other, and I'm always like, you got a wife and whatever, and you got a boyfriend, leave each other alone. And they got like a moment this last spring, like a week, where neither one of them were married or with somebody else or having seven other people going on. And they went on a date, and this October they got married. And, you know, I think if I wouldn't have made amends to that girl, they wouldn't be married. And so God continues, even though I think that life isn't good, continues to give me little miracles and convince me that he's got a plan and he's not going to tell me what it is. But I got this really good feeling it is going to be a good plan, better than anything I could have come up with. And I just want to read my favorite reading, and I'll close this up. All right, and I didn't even really cry that much. I did good. All right. Here's my reading. I got the two, just in case. But here's this reading. It's Keys to the Kingdom. It's on 275. It's my favorite reading, and it is. It says, and I believe this is true for myself, A is not a plan for recovery that can be finished and done with. It is a way of life, and the challenges contained in its principles is great enough to keep any human being striving for as long as he lives. We do not and cannot outgrow this plan. As arrested alcoholics, we must have a program for living that allows for limitless expansion. Keeping one foot in front of the other is essential for maintaining our arrestments. Others may idle in retrogressive groove without too much danger, but retrogression can spell death for us. However, it isn't as rough as it sounds, as we do become grateful for the necessity that makes us toe the line, and we find that we are compensated for consistent effort by the countless dividends we receive. A complete change takes place in our approach to life. Where we used to run from responsibility, we find ourselves accepting it with gratitude that we can successfully shoulder it. Instead of wanting to escape some perplexing problem, we experience the thrill of a challenge and the opportunity it affords for another chance, another application of AA's techniques, and we find ourselves tackling it with surprising vigor. And this person writes, the last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I've had my share of problems, heartaches, and disappointments, because that's life. But I have also known a great deal of joy and a peace that is handmaiden of an inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my AA friends, an unusual quality of friendship. For to these people, I am truly related, first through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love, without strings, without obligations, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache so deep in the heart of every alcoholic that nothing before could ever reach it. The ache is gone and never need return. Now there is a sense of belonging, of being wanted, needed, and loved. In return for a bottle and a hangover, we've been given the keys to the kingdom. Thank you.